Hello and welcome to the Family Advice Service podcast. We're doing something a little different for our next two podcasts, as we know there was a lot of interest in our January webinar with Janet Hughes and Jonathan Marsden on the Sustainable Farming Incentive announcements. So we're creating two podcasts from the audio recordings from that event. This first one will include the briefings that Janet and Jonathan gave, and the next in the series will be a recording of our question and answer session from that event. I hope you find it useful and interesting. Please do let us know.
Welcome. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this webinar on the farming offer in 2024, delivered by the Farming Advice Service on behalf of DEFRA. I'm Laura Harpham, the Programme Manager for the Farming Advice Service, and I'll be hosting today. I'm joined by DEFRA Farming and Countryside Director, Janet Hughes, and the Policy Lead on the Sustainable Farming Incentive, Jonathan Marsden. This webinar is in collaboration with DEFRA and the RPA, as well as the Farming Forum, and we have a team of colleagues available to explain the offer and answer your questions in the Q&A chat, as well as a live Q&A with Janet and Jonathan after a run-through of the latest announcements. Just to manage expectation, although we would love this webinar to serve as a second Oxford Farming Conference, there won't be any major new policy announcements this morning. We'll do our best to provide some clarity and a useful discussion on the detail around SFI and the announcements earlier in the month. And we know people are keen to hear further details on those. We'll share as much as is known and is confirmed, and hopefully some indication of timelines. And there will, of course, be further detail rolled out as we go through the spring and into the summer. We'll answer as many questions as we can in the Q&A. So without further ado, I will hand over to Janet and invite you to kick things off, please.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Laura. And thank you ever so much, everybody, for dialing in. My name is Janet Hughes. If you haven't met me before, I'm the Director of the Farming and Countryside Programme here in DEFRA, the absolute best job in the civil service and arguably the public sector by a country mile, in my view, because we get to work with farmers and we get to try and make things work for farmers. And we have the opportunity here to do something really useful for all of you, we hope. I thought it might be helpful if we just give, if I gave a bit of an overview about what we're doing for those not already familiar with the programme. And also my colleague Jonathan Marsden is going to talk you through what is actually coming this year that's new. So the context, first of all, the first thing to say is that we in DEFRA have been spending a lot of time getting out and about, talking to farmers, visiting farms, listening to what you've got to say. Some of our team were out at an auction mart yesterday, just for example, and learning about the context that you're operating in, because we understand that we have not done that enough in the past. And as a result, some of the things that we design and deliver are not going to work for you unless we understand the context that you're operating in. And we know that you are facing the impacts of climate change whilst also being blamed for it. You are seeing huge fluctuation in inputs and output prices. You are under pressure from all angles in terms of the supply chain and producing food, and also being, playing the vital role that you play in your communities. And we really understand and respect that. And we are going a long way to try to change our culture in our organisation to make sure that we all are understanding and respecting that and trying to do things that are going to actually work for you and your business. Because if what we're doing doesn't work for you and your business, then it doesn't work at all. So that's the first thing to say. What we're trying to achieve through these reforms, which are the biggest reforms in 70 years in agricultural policy in England, and we know that that's a massive change for everybody, and we need to take that responsibility very deeply, and we do. And what we're trying to achieve is three sets of things. We're trying to maintain domestic food production and security, which is really important, as we all know. We're also trying to help improve farm productivity and ensure that there's an opportunity for all farm businesses to be viable and profitable. And we're also trying to achieve some really ambitious outcomes for the environment and climate in terms of biodiversity, water quality, air quality, carbon emissions, and dealing with flooding and drought and the impacts of climate change. And we're trying to do those things all at the same time. So we're not asking you to choose between food production and the environment. What we're trying to do is offer a range of ways for you to help make your farm more efficient and profitable and productive, and at the same time more resilient and more productive for the environment. And we want to do as much as we can in the sweet spot where we can serve all of those objectives at the same time. And there are many farms already showing how that can be done, but how that can be done varies obviously from farm to farm. Every farm is different. There's no such thing as a typical farm, and it's farmers that have got to decide what's the right combination of things to do on their particular farm. And so we're here to get behind you and not get in your way as you do that. And the way that we're trying to do that is by improving our services to you And I hope you will have seen in recent years an improvement in the way that services are operated to you by way of making payments more frequently and on time, dealing with queries, dealing with inspections and controls in a more fair and proportionate way, where we're trying to prevent breaches and advise and support you rather than detect and penalise on the assumption that you're trying to do things wrong. And when we know that we've got a long history of that approach and that we've got a big job to do to build trust and confidence in what we're doing and to earn your trust and confidence in what we're doing. And we aim to do that by delivering and showing that we are serious about doing this in a different way. So we're trying to improve both our regulatory services and our schemes to make them more business-like, more trustworthy for you, and not something that you think is a risk but a benefit to your business. And we're doing that by making them simpler, clearer, faster and fairer. We've got the range of schemes, which we'll go into, but we've got, at the moment, we have the Sustainable Farming Incentive, which is designed for large-scale uptake, which is the main thing we're going to talk about today. We have Countryside Stewardship mid-tier and higher tier, and those are designed, higher tier is designed for bespoke agreements, which are doing much more complex action in specific areas, which might be higher risk and higher benefit type areas. And the mid-tier is more designed for sort of mass uptake. And one of the things we're going to do this year is combine that mid-tier offer with SFI. And I can see there's a question about that. And some members of the Farming Forum have been asking about this for a long time, and we have been listening. And we think having a separate mid-tier and SFI scheme and service is not helpful. It's too complicated. And we're going to offer all of the actions in those two schemes in a single combined offer this summer. And we'll talk through what that looks like shortly. So we've got our regulatory and service improvements. We've got our schemes. We've also got landscape recovery within those schemes, which is for larger scale, longer term projects. But they do all involve farmers working together. Almost all of them are groups of farmers, including in many cases tenants working together over up to 20 years or longer period of time. And then finally, we've got our range of grants and support for productivity and innovation and animal health and welfare. And you can find information about all of these if you look at funding for farmers on gov.uk. You can see all that information in the same place. And one of the things we're looking to improve is the way we provide that information to you, because at the moment you'd have to know the name of each grant and the name of each scheme and decide which one you're going to apply for and know when the window is going to be open. And there's an awful lot of bureaucratic complexity there, which is not helpful. So what we're seeking to do is streamline the way we offer all these things to you to make it much easier for you to find what's available, work out what's relevant and useful to you, and access that without having to pay somebody else to do that for you and without having to spend days of your life sweating in front of a computer screen, because not everybody wants to do that, do they? Or indeed has time to do that. So we've got our service improvements, our grants and our schemes. And how we're trying to do this is with farmers. We've been working with thousands of farmers over years to learn what works for you and how can we make these schemes work on your farms. We've had our SFI pilot, which is now in its third year with 850 farmers. We've learned a huge amount from that. We had the early rollout of SFI last year. We learned a huge amount from that, and particularly about the need to just make our schemes really flexible, so that you can decide what combinations of things you want to do on your farm, because each farm is different, as I said earlier. And so the offer this year is already much more popular, the offer from 2023, much more popular. It's got 23 actions in it. You can pick whichever ones you want to do in whatever quantities and wherever on the farm you want to do them. And then you can add to your agreement each year. And you can rotate a lot of the options, and within the actions, there's a lot more flexibility than there used to be about how you go about doing them. So instead of us saying you must sow this mix of seeds on this date, which has historically been more the case, now we're saying please make sure you have winter cover in place over the winter, and you decide what particular specific seed mix and what specific dates are most likely to work for you. That offer is still open for applications. It's open for applications right now, and we've had more than 9,000 already, covering more than 1 million hectares of land. So if you're interested in getting involved, then please do go and have a look online at the SFI offer now. And then when the new actions become available later this year, you'll be able to add those in, either by having an extra agreement or by adding them in on the anniversary of your agreement. We can come into a bit more detail about that if you'd like a bit later on. So that's our kind of what we're doing overall. What we're trying to do this year is improve our service by combining the mid-tier and SFI offers into a single offer where you can log on and see all of it in the same place. We're also doing a lot of work to make it easier to find the bits of the scheme that are most relevant to you, because you might not want to read all 200 actions that are available to sift out the ones that are most useful to you. So we're doing some research with farmers and some design work to prototype different ways of presenting the information in ways that are going to be easily accessible to somebody without having to pay an agent to interpret it for you. And so you can choose what to do, and then you can add to your agreement each year, as I mentioned. And we're adding in a whole host of new actions, which we've been working on with farmers, practitioners, and other experts over quite a long period of time to pay for a wider range of things for you to do on your farm. So if you're already in a scheme, there will be plenty more for you to do. And the scheme will be open, because I know this is one of the questions, will be open for applications this summer, and we'll publish information about the full details of the scheme, including which things can be combined on the same areas of land, what the specific rules are for each action. We'll publish those in the spring. Now, I realise spring and summer are not very precise dates, and that you do need some precise dates so that you can plan ahead, and we will be publishing those dates shortly. We're not quite ready to do that yet, but we are almost ready to do that, and we know that you need to know that information. So we will provide that very soon. But broadly speaking, there'll be the full details of the scheme will come in the spring, and it will be open for applications in the summer, and it will work like SFI does now. So you apply, once you've accepted your agreement, you start on the first of the next month. In respect of higher tier, we will continue to run a separate process for that, because those are bespoke agreements and it's a competitive process, but that will also be open on those same timescales, not a rolling window. So those are the sort of broad timescales for this year and what we're trying to achieve. We've got more actions, better service, more choice, and we've also increased prices for a lot of our actions and added in some premium prices. And if you want to look at the detail of this, we published some information at the beginning of January in our Agriculture Transition Plan update, and the Secretary of State made a speech at the Oxford Farming Conference outlining what we were doing. So that's a kind of overview. I'm going to hand over to Jonathan, who's going to give us a bit of an overview of what are the new actions that are coming this year, and then we'll open up for questions, if that's okay, Laura.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. You have the Zoom spotlight, so please do carry on.
I feel very honoured. Well, good morning, everybody. So first of all, just a few minutes regarding the new actions regarding precision farming. This is new area, new territory for us. Some of our colleagues on the productivity side of funding this type of equipment, and the first thing to say is we've structured our grants in ELM and the payments that you can see on the screen here in such a way that if you use some of those productivity grants to buy this type of equipment, you can have that capital grant for the kit and also come into our scheme and get the payments for actually using it, deploying it. The next thing to say in this space is we know that this sort of equipment is expensive and often out of the reach of small or medium-sized farms. But also we know a lot of farms in that area rely on contractors. And by offering, and from speaking to the contracting industry, they often struggle to charge extra for the use of this innovative and precision farming equipment. And we're hoping that by putting area-based payments in place, that we make this attractive to far more farmers and growers, and we open up the opportunity for the contracting in of these services, stimulate that sector. The final bit before we get into some of the detail of this is why are we doing precision farming? And this really stems from, as Janet set out, our objectives are for benefiting the environment with these schemes. We've got targets regarding water quality and biodiversity, but also supporting sustainable food production. And there are some real, with precision farming, we can deliver against both of those objectives. A bit of a fact for you to set all this in context. If we look at the data that we get out of the pesticide survey that happens every other year, in this country, there are around 13,000 tonnes of active pesticide ingredient applied to land in England, which is a huge amount. And we know you need to use that to protect crops, etc. But there is now technology and practices that we can work together to reduce the amount that's actually needed. So first of all, if we look at precision application of crop nutrients, what we're looking at here is equipment which varies automatically the application rate of fertilizer within the field in response to the crop needs in that particular bit of the field. So that will be zonal soil testing for your P and K, and the use of remote sensing or equipment to detect the amount of nitrogen that's required. The last three on here are all aimed at reducing the amount of herbicide that's required. So remote or camera controlled spraying technology, things like just turn compensation on sprays doesn't count for this. This is actually, you know, targeted spraying of the herbicides. And then we've got two actions at the bottom looking at robotic mechanical weeding. And robotic non-mechanical weeding is using lasers and electrocuting the weeds. And those are those two actions. It's not just about weeding in the rows. It's about weeding between the plants in the rows to give you some idea of the level that we're looking at for here. So change of tack entirely, managing particular species where we've got particular targets. First of all, let's just talk about native breeds. So rare and native breeds are important for us, and they can help where we're managing particular habitats. We've done a lot of work looking at how that works at the moment. It's only available in higher tier, and there's a very limited number of people who get access to those payments. And we're wanting to broaden the native breed supplement, the rare and native breed supplements out. So there will be two bands of payment, if you like, for grassland habitats and then for lowland heath and moorland habitats, because the stocking rates tend to be very different on those. And then within those payment bands, within those habitat types, there will be banding of the payments based on the proportion of the grazing livestock that are on the rate native and rare breed lists. The types of animals that we're looking for here, it's cattle, sheep, ponies and horses. And if they're on the rare and native list, then they will be eligible for those payments if you meet those grazing requirements. Then moving a little bit away from the native breeds, we've got the invasive species, those species that we need to control because they predate or do damage on other animals, or they damage habitats. And as you can see there, there'll be deer control, control of grey squirrel, mink, and the rather not quite rightly named edible dormouse that makes it sound quite nice and cuddly. It actually, in the southeast, it does an awful lot of damage to native woodlands. Those actions where we're looking at what is essentially lethal control, they will be, we will need to control those quite carefully. They will sit, it's likely, in the higher tier. There will need to be a management plan in place. We will need to have looked at what other control measures are available, and if they've not worked, the lethal control is the sort of last resort. And then sitting around that, we've got, there will be payments for control of invasive plants and control of bracken and rhododendron. And yes, we are aware we've just lost Agilox from the arsenal regarding bracken. Okay, moving on. So on soils, we've already got an offer in SFI regarding soils for testing for organic matter, doing soil plans, winter cover crops, etc. We're adding to that with payments for no-till. We know no-till's not for everybody. And the joy of moving to the pick and mix approaches, if you don't feel it's right for your farm and your situation, then you don't need to do it. It will be no-till in that it will be direct drilling or broadcasting seed. And there will be an allowance if there's a need in a particular situation to do subsoiling, then we've built that into the offer. And then to add to our winter cover crops, we will also be introducing multi-species cover crops for the spring and early summer, and also for the summer, early autumn. So what we would traditionally think of as a catch crop, so planting a cover crop between harvesting one crop and planting the next cash crop. We built it in this way because we know there's a range of different cropping scenarios out there. Obviously, there's the classic one between, you know, harvesting in July, August with the combine, getting some green cover in before you then plant again in the winter. but also there are scenarios, particularly for the veg guys, where this is appropriate earlier in the year. Okay, so scrub is an important habitat for us. And I know as farmers, we all tend to think it's messy and untidy, but in terms of a habitat, it is incredibly important. And we've done a lot of work on this, looking at the payment rates. And there'll be two versions of this going forward. One that will sit in the equivalent of our higher tier, but also we're looking at, can we make this available on a more wide scale basis in the structure of SFI, but incredibly important habitat for us. And we just need more of it. Right, looking at the moorland situation, we have done a huge amount of work over the last few years looking at how we can support moorland farmers and the habitats that those moorlands support. We've got a far more nuanced offer than we've had in the past, a lot more flexibility, and the grazing actions that are at the top of the screen there, we're looking to position those in SFI. On the low grazing rates on moorland, we're looking to have three bands of payment based on the number of livestock that are up on the moor. And then in addition to that, there will be additional payments if based on the proportion of those livestock that are cattle or ponies. So the more cattle and ponies and the less sheep, there will be supplementary payments for that. In that same space, if the native breeds that we mentioned about earlier, those will also be eligible on the moorland, depending on the breeds of cattle and ponies that you've got and sheep. And then the managed livestock on moorland, this is around a combination of shepherding the livestock while they're on the moor and also any temporary rest periods where there's no livestock on the moor at all, apart from the ponies. We know it's very difficult to take the ponies off the moor. And you, where it's not triple SI, will be able to pick and choose that combination of actions that best work for you. Just a word on triple SIs and moorland. If it is triple SI, then those grazing actions, you will need to engage with Natural England and agree that grazing regime using those actions and the payment rates, because obviously they need to be able to consent agreements. And then the bottom actions on the page here, these will sit in the higher tier section of the scheme, because as you will see, there's some quite significant payments here, particularly for either re-wetting peat on blanket bog, or if it's already wet, keeping it wet, but also where it's non-peat soils and there are opportunities to keep water on the moor for longer, in terms of particularly trying to prevent downstream flooding, and some of the events we've had recently kind of underline the importance of this. All of that will need a lot of detailed planning and work in terms of potentially feasibility studies, but because there's sums of money involved and we need to make sure it will work as well. And then also what we're bringing in new are, we know low stocking rates, etc., create fuel load on moorland, and we will be introducing payments for maintaining fire and fuel breaks. Again, those will need to be agreed as part of a moorland restoration plan, a wildfire management plan. Okay, so a little bit about our grasslands then. So obviously in SFI at the moment, we have already got payments for, let's call it productive grassland. So we have got payments for having legumes in grassland, predominantly clovers. And we've also got payments for herbal lays, where you create a specific lay habitat with a mixture of species, herbs and clovers, as an alternative to that sort of productive silage crop land, which is probably getting you 200-300 kilos in nitrogen. Those, as an alternative to that, the herbal lays can be really, really beneficial. What we've got on the screen at the moment is more for the grassland, what we would call the grassland habitats. So we've got the rough grazing for upland birds, the UP2. The payment rate for that has increased quite significantly over recent years. It's not that long ago where I think we were only paying either £17 or £19 a hectare. We're now up to 100 and 121. We've done a lot of work on the wet grasslands for our breeding waders and the wildfowl, and those payment rates have increased quite significantly. Those are likely to be actions that sit in stewardship going forward, but we're looking at the opportunities there may be to make that available on a more wide-scale basis. And I suppose the big one, the standout one, is this managing and creating species-rich grasslands. So the payment rate here has increased massively. I think we've gone from 181 or 2 up to the 646. And we have brought together the creation of species-rich grasslands with the management of them. Historically, there's been quite a big payment for creating species-rich grassland. And then when that agreement's come to an end, we've rewarded you with a lower payment rate just for carrying on the maintenance of it. We brought all that together. So the payment for species-rich grassland is a 646. And there will be additional capital grants available for the one-off costs associated with creating species-rich grassland. So preparation of the seed bed, buying the seed will be dealt with as a separate capital item. The other change here is at the moment, those species-rich grassland actions have only been available in higher tier. We are looking to make those more available in an SFI situation, but we are likely to need what we would call an endorsement from an advisor to say it will work if we're creating species-rich grassland, or we know the habitat's data layer isn't perfect. So if someone's got species-rich grassland which isn't shown on the priority habitats data layer, then an advisor can pop out and say, yes, this qualifies, and off we go. Again, in the grassland space, new offers regarding species-rich floodplain meadows, and again, some significant payment rates there, given the importance of that as a habitat to us. Scrapes and gutters, so creating, there's been capital grants for creating the sort of gullies, the scrapes in wet grasslands for a few years. What we've got on the screen here is an additional new annual payment for managing those scrapes and gutters to make sure they're providing the right habitats for the particularly the breeding waders. Haymaking supplement, this has been in the scheme since the year dot, really. What we've done here, we're introducing two versions of this. So what we've had at the moment is just a single payment rate for a single cutting date. And we've introduced an additional action here with a higher payment rate for a later cutting date. So cutting in sort of July will attract one payment rate. Cutting in August will attract a different payment rate, for example. I'm not going to dwell on the rust control supplements, the shepherding and grazing, because I'm conscious we need to leave heaps of time for questions, and I'm starting to ramble. Okay, lowland peat. So this is particularly aimed at peat situations it's the pumped drainage systems, really, where we've got good control of the water level in those systems. We know if we allow peat to dry out, we get huge emissions of carbon when that peat is cultivated. I think the old saying is, in the fens, you lose the height of a man in the life of a man. And we need to really look and try and address some of the issues that's creating. We've had the SW17, SW18 in stewardship, not for terribly long, just a few years now, but we've looked at these very hard. We've looked at very low uptake levels that we were getting, the reasons why. And as you can see, we've made quite significant changes to those payment rates. Now, that the water levels here, for those high payment rates, it is bringing the water table up to very close to the surface, because that's where we get the maximum reduction in carbon. And we accept that that will prevent the vast majority of crops being grown. Not all, but the vast majority. But what the science also tells us, if we can bring that water table up just to a lower level, we still get some benefits. So if it's in the sort of 30 to 50 centimetre level, the water table, then we do still get some reductions in carbon. And actually, there's a far greater range of crops that can still be grown in that situation. So those are the new actions that attract the slightly lower payment rates. All of this will sit in higher tier. There will need to be feasibility studies. You will need to work with your neighbours, because obviously you can't bring the water table up on your field without affecting the fields around about. There will need to be liaison with the EA and internal drainage boards, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, on boundaries, so this stuff will all sit in SFI. We've got a good suite of actions in SFI at the moment for hedgerows. There's in here, there will be payments for maintaining dry stone walls. There are already capital grants for restoring dry stone walls. And likewise, there will be payments for maintaining earth banks and in the southwest, the stone-faced hedge banks. There will be a new action for ditch management in SFI, which is managing those ditches in a more sensitive way rather than just clearing out both sides on a fairly regular basis. The payment there, the simple ditch management, is just to do that in a little bit more sensitive way on a rotational basis. And then obviously we know ditches can be incredibly important reservoirs for wildlife and nature. And there will be a higher tier version of the ditch management, for particularly linked in with the wet grassland management, etc.
Hello, Laura here again. Please excuse the abrupt interruption, but that marks the end of the briefings from our webinar, and we go on to the question and answer session in the next podcast. Please do continue to listen to the series if you found this alternative podcast format useful and informative. We hope to see you at the next one.